To work together. That's our greatest strength. Welcome to the Captain's Chair, a Star Trek Strange New Worlds podcast on the Fangirl Zone. I'm Richard Dave, and joining me on this mission into the unknown is...
I'm Chief Engineer Steve, and today we'll be discussing Episode 3 of Season 1 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
Yes, we will. I saw someone post on Twitter, best episode ever.
And, wow, and, three episodes in?
Come yeah, on. Yeah, I know. And she got a nice rebuttal, including me. I mean, I actually answered one of the people that answered her. Somebody else complained that, why does everyone have to have a backstory, you know? I mean, there's nothing wrong with a backstory, but does it have to be a tragic backstory or a sad or a hidden, you know?
Right.
We had two in this episode.
Yeah, I know. We didn't get Nurse. We haven't gotten Nurse Chapel's backstory though, so hopefully it won't be one of those.
Oh, I know that one front and back, but I just can't reveal it now.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, are the other initial thoughts? I know we're not rating him, but if we did, I was going to give it 3 out of 5 Una tunic tears.
Yes.
It's going back to her old SI days. Recline in a chair, tear open the tunic. So what do you think? Out of the first three we've had, first, last, middle?
I would probably go... middle.
Yeah.
Three and then one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed this episode. It was nice to see Una in the spotlight for this episode. And yeah, there was some definitely shocking developments.
Yeah, I'll say. I don't like her hair.
Right.
That's just me. Like, I mean, they got it like ponytailed and in all the promo shots. She's a lot happier person, and she's got like a flip to it, or whatever you want to call it, a little more body. It's a little more serious now. Should she be that serious?
Well, I can see how she was, and I think now that the secret's out and, you know, Pike reacted the way he did, I think that will allow her to loosen up.
Yeah. It just seemed to, yeah, she was seemed a little looser before, but of course she had to act a little guilty. That was the whole thrust of the show.
Yes.
Did you know she did the opening narration for the show?
Yeah, the log entry, yeah.
Yeah. I wonder, I haven't really noticed before, if you're going to be the key character in an episode, you get the opener, you know, the narration.
Right now, that's the way the first three have gone.
Uh-huh.
Because the first one was Pike, and then Uhura, and now Una, so.
Right. We'll see if they'll pass that test next episode.
We got 13 to see if they can keep the streak up.
Yeah. It's not that I didn't like it. I know I gave it a 3 out of 5. I liked it better on the second viewing.
Right.
I think I felt like that guy on Twitter who said, does everyone have to have some terrible backstory or secret? And I was going to write back to him, don't watch Star Trek Picard.
Yes. Or Discovery.
Yeah, well, for sure. Good grief.
All right. Well, let's get into episode 3, Ghost of Alluria. Una must confront a secret she's been hiding when a contagion ravages the ship, incapacitating the rest of the crew. Except Spock and Pike.
Yep. Safe on the haunted planet.
Yes.
With an ion storm, your typical ion storm.
Yes.
Good effects.
Oh, yes.
So the USS Enterprise arrives at a colony abandoned by the Illyrians, who were first encountered by the NX-01 in the Delphic Expanse a century earlier, unknown to Captain Archer at the time. The Illyrians engage in genetic modification, which had been banned by the Federation as a result of the devastating eugenics wars. An ion storm approaches as the landing party prepares to beam up And as any Trek fan will tell you, ion storms and transmitters do not go well together.
No.
They need a filter for that.
Yes.
I need more power, Captain. Even worse, young Ensign Lance opens a cabinet that contains mysterious glowing objects. You know, when he did that, that's the first, any, you know, haunted house show, we're like, what are you doing?
Yes.
You might as well run down to the basement while you're at it, Lance.
Yes. Well, that's basically what he did.
Yep. While Captain Pike searches for Spock, number one and the rest of the team beam back aboard the ship. You could tell something was wrong because Una didn't want to leave for
right.
some reason.
Yeah.
With their panels nearly scrambled, it felt as if we might have another Tuvix situation on our hands. Luckily, Hemmer saves the day. Though the Iron Storm prevents Pike and Spock from turning to Enterprise. I like Hemmer's modesty.
Yes.
Such I'm a genius. Good grief. Things begin to get a bit strange as Erica Ortegas finds Ensign Lance injuring himself in an attempt to get closer to a lighting fixture. Punches his head through it. Wow.
Sticks his head right in there.
I know they broke the glass, but I can't picture a starship in the future having easily breakable glass on the hallways.
No.
Come on. Photon torpedoes, lasers, In her quarters, number one also seems invigorated by the light, but following a moment where her skin appears to glow, the symptoms apparently passes. Dr. Mbenga reports that the other away team members aren't as fortunate as they are experiencing vitamin D deficiencies in addition to the strong urge to get perilously close to light sources. Hemmer is adamant that the transporter's biofilters would have screened out any contagions, yet the affliction soon begins to spread among the crew. Now, I don't know if I'm being a little too technical, but I wondered how, Una transports as much as anybody.
Right.
How come the transporter didn't pick up any genetic modification? Now, before I say anything, I know it's supposed to screen out contagions no matter what.
Right.
But as seriously as they take genetic modifications, that's their thing.
Right.
It's a big no-no. Why wouldn't they, be programmed to detect that too? Got a thought?
That's a good question, and it doesn't make any sense to me either why they wouldn't have already known that Una was not completely 100% human.
Yeah, that's a mystery, too. Yes. They had to win some type of screening process. I mean, they take plenty of medical, examinations for her. She must have had hundreds,
Right.
Yeah. Is that a plot hole?
I would say probably so.
Okay, me too.
One I can live with.
Yeah, we can forgive that. Number one discusses the situation with Security Chief La'an Noonien Singh, who voices opposition to genetic augmentation. She was rather pissed at it.
Yes.
Specifically citing her ancestor, Khan Noonien Singh, as an example of bioengineered mass murderers. La'an comes down with a condition perplexing Dr. Mbenga and Nurse Chapel as they seek to trace the source of the infections. As a precautionary measure, Una initiates the Enterprise's lockdown protocol, a procedure far too familiar to those of us struggling with the COVID pandemic. I have no doubt there was some inspiration there.
Yes.
Further research reveals that the contagion travels on light and uses it to trigger the pleasure centers of its victims, thus encouraging them to seek out more light and further spread the condition. Think of it as outbreaks of, like in The Naked Time and The Naked Now, crossed with the euphoria out of an anaphasic ghost candle from The Next Generation's Sub Rosa.
On the planet below, Spock locates a journal that indicates the Allurians from this particular colony hope to reverse their genetic modifications in order to join the Federation. The ion storm continues to rage, and both Pike and his science officer see what appear to be plasma life forms through the gusting winds. The creatures make their way into the building, but rather than harm Pike and Spock, they shield them from the strengthening storm. Afterwards, Spock theorizes that these life forms used to be the Illyrian colonists who succumbed to the disease and somehow became one with the electrical fields contained in the planet's ion storms.
That was an easy guess. As soon as I saw them, like, oh, there they are.
Yep.
Had to be.
Back on the Enterprise, number one stresses to Mbinga and Chapel that the key to the immunity must exist in her blood sample. Why? Number one is an Allurian, though from a different colony. The Federation prohibits mixing modified Allurian blood with that of other species, prompting the excellent discussion of bigotry that parallels modern-day legislation that prevents gay and bisexual men from donating blood due to offensive stereotypes. Once again, Star Trek manages to seamlessly add meaningful commentary into its storylines. Oh, a whole bunch of them in this one.
It's only like going to get worse.
The children of the comet. When number one prevents La'an from enveloping the ship in light via a warp core breach, the two become eradicated.
Irradiated.
Irradiated. You're right. Not
they almost became eradicated.
Yes, they did. Luna's modified genes healed her, and her proximity to Security Chief allowed La'an to be saved as well. Chapel harnesses this information and is able to synthesize a cure for the crew. With the crew out of danger, Number One reports her true heritage to the captain, who has no interest in reporting her. Much like the genetically augmented Julian Brashear in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Una will continue to serve Starfleet, the best Number One in the fleet.
Yep.
However, the episode still has one surprise left to spring on us. The contagion breached the biofilters because Dr. Mbinga refused to permit space dock engineers to upgrade the emergency medical transporter. Mbinga confides to Number One that, similar to Scotty's transport exploits and relics, he has secretly stored his daughter's pattern in the buffer to prevent an incurable illness from progressing any further. Una passes the empathy Pike showed to her onto Mbinga, agreeing that they will keep his daughter safe until a cure is found. So this episode shifted its focus away from Pike and Spock, even though they had some great lines together.
Yeah. So casual. Yeah, they were obviously the B plot.
Oh, absolutely they were. But successfully leaned on Number One and the rest of the senior staff to drive the action forward. The episode does a magnificent job of asking difficult questions and juxtaposing a 23rd century medical mystery with references to our current pandemic and bigoted blood donation laws. Una's decision to delete a deeply personal log on the show's closing moment serves as an excellent homage to Captain Sisko's erasure of his own in DS9's The Pale Moonlight.
It struck me as a form of therapy, you know? Yes. It's good to talk it out, say
absolutely
it aloud, and then...
Yeah, you talk it, and it helps.
Yeah.
How will the surprise revelations about Number One and Dr. Mbinga play out? Perhaps we'll find out as the Enterprise's adventures continue. In the words of Captain Pike, hit it.
Hit it. I did make a couple of notes. So, you know, I put a star next to my favorite, like tearing open the blouse.
Yes.
You know, notice La'an calls Una chief. Was he a chief when she rescued?
I think so.
La'an? I think so too. Still, kind of a breach of protocol. These guys are so loose with their discipline.
Yes.
Not a chief anymore. Don't call her chief. You can call her honey, but not chief. And we get a taste of Una's strength too. She punches out La'an. I mean, La'an's like mouthing off to her. Then just, okay, that's enough of that. Boom.
Yes. And just picks up Hemner like he's a sack of groceries.
I know. I'm not sure we saw the legs, you know, hanging over the front. I never saw the back of them. I wonder if they just had some stunt legs or something, a bag of legs.
Yes, probably.
Probably. The last little note I had there was Mbinga's keeping his daughter in the transporter buffer.
Right.
Man, that's a serious violation. He endangered the entire crew. And of course,
yes.
he I mean, that was bad. They had one guy, Hammer, who's beaming up some of the mental so he can the mantle of the planet so he can bask in the glow of it.
Yes.
And La'an. Oh, yeah,
we had two almost major disasters with Hammer major and La'an.
Yeah.
In the warp core. So it was like, dang.
Yeah, that's bad. What happened to do no harm? I mean, dude, come on. I wonder if we could keep her in a buffer, you know, back on Earth or a planet and have a timer on it, like the oven timer or something like that. She'd pop in and then pop back. Somebody right. would be sitting there like, what was that? You see a little girl? I don't know. I like him. I like him as a character, but that was pretty serious violation of my thoughts.
Oh, yeah, because Una comes in and she is not a happy camper.
Yeah, she didn't look too happy.
No, until she found out that it was because of his daughter, and she goes, well, we'll get you a supply of power straight from the warp core, and we'll keep her there until we find a cure.
So Hammer has to know, and if Hammer has to know, the captain has to know about it. And yep. Well, she did say we, but jeepers.
Yeah.
So, up for any Easter eggs there, Steve?
Oh, absolutely.
Chief Engineer Steve, that is. It's okay, we call you Chief.
Yeah.
So the Illyrians, the focus of the episode, finds the Enterprise trying to find out what happened to a colony of Illyrians. Although a seemingly unrelated alien race called Illyrians appeared in a 2004 episode of Enterprise called Damage, this group of Illyrians, of which Una, is a secret member, is actually a composite of Illyrians mentioned throughout a number of the Star Trek novels. Starting in 1988, a book called Vulcan's Glory, is there any other? Written by the original series powerhouse D.C. Fontana, I'll say.
Yeah.
It was established, yeah, that number one was an Illyrian. Several novelists ran with this concept, which existed outside of actual canon, including David Mack's first Star Trek Discovery novel, Desperate Hours, which features the crew of the Senju and the Enterprise teaming up before Discovery Season 2 and before Anson Mount, Ethan Peck, and Rebecca Romijn had even been cast. The point is, from 1989 to 2017, Star Trek books have been trying to make number one status as an Illyrian a thing, and now it is actually canon. So I wouldn't mind being taking credit for that.
Right.
Yeah. There's a wrinkle. Before all those novels, being an Illyrian didn't carry this kind of stigma. Yeah.
True.
Yeah. So, although nobody is accidentally sent to the Mirror Universe in this episode, an ion storm was the reason why Kirk, Scotty, Uhura, and Bones were sent to the Mirror Universe in the original episode, Mirror, Mirror. An ion storm was also why Captain Lorca crossed over from the Mirror Universe in Discovery Season 1. they need better screening out in space for ion storms.
Yes.
turn around, here it comes. Number one rips her shirt. Yeah, one of my favorite moments. The moment of number one dramatically ripping her uniform tunic. Good reference several episodes of the original series in which Kirk's tunic is ripped, seemingly just for the hell of it. Of course,
Yeah.
If he didn't, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Like Kirk, number one gets her tunic fixed pretty quickly and is totally back to normal in the next scene. Well, any crew that would replicate water
right.
can replicate a uniform, too. Anyway, eugenics war and con. Una and La'an talk a lot about the history of genetic modification, why it's banned throughout the Federation. Una says, thanks to the eugenics wars, I bet you know all about that period in history. You know, I think that was a deliberate jab/diversion because La'an was, you know, on to something. So I think right. Una just, you know, snuck in this little aside, but you know all about that. It was slightly cruel. But La'an retorts, you don't grow up with a bioengineered mass murderer as your ancestor and not develop a thick skin. There's a lot going on here. This
yes,
is the full.
Is.
Yes, there is. First full confirmation that La'an is related to Khan. Una even says his full name. Second, both Una and La'an are very familiar with the history of the eugenic wars in a way that most people in the Starfleet are not. Notice this conversation takes place in private and Spock is not around. This helps preserve canon because in the original series classic Space Seed, Spock makes a point of telling everyone that the official records of the eugenic wars were unclear. Unless they covered their butts on that one.
Yes, they did.
So why do Una and La'an know so much about it? Easy. Both have information that's well outside of Starfleet historical records. And both have a personal stake in said history because of their backgrounds, although La'an herself is not a genetic augment. She is the descendant of one. Meanwhile, Una is genetically engineered, which would explain why she knows so much about this aspect of Earth history. Do you notice how easily she gets around classified information, too?
Yes.
Skip it. Skip ahead. There must be some protocol, but why bother saying classified to the ship's number one if she's just going to bypass it, you know? I would like be like Discovery's computer and just say, oh, fine.
Yes.
Whatever. I always get overruled. So, La'an and the Augments, which is a great name for a musical group. Yes. Skipping ahead a bit to La'an and Number One's fight later in the episode, La'an furiously tells Number One that children teased her and called her an Augment when she was younger. This is a retroactive designation for the genetically engineered Superman of which Khan was a member. The term Augment comes from the Enterprise story 3-episode arc, which includes Borderland, Cold Station 12, and the Augments. But you really have to wonder exactly how La'an's ancestry works, because she's literally has Khan's exact last name. Is she a direct descendant? I don't know. I wish I did know.
Yes.
If so, how does that work? Did someone use some of Khan's DNA, and then that person eventually had a conventional family, which over the centuries resulted in La'an? I mean, that was my first thought, but how? I mean,
right.
Infamously, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan featured a baby living with Khan and his followers on Seti Alpha 5. I like the way you spit that out.
Yes.
Of course, that film takes place well after Strange New World, but it's still fun to think that the idea of Khan's children might have been floating around for a while.
Yes, absolutely.
So, let's get on to Number One, La'an's fight, like a Space Seed fight. Just as Kirk fought Khan in the main engineering in Space Seed, during a potential overload of the warp engines, Una and La'an in main engineering fight in much the same way. Even the colors of the uniform match. The difference, of course, is that Number One, the person who has not lost her mind, is the one who genetically enhanced super strength. How ironic.
Yes.
There's even a little musical cue that sounds a bit like the classic TOS fight music, which I always loved.
Yes.
So, move on to Uhura is rocking a lower deck style bunk. Yeah, not sure how fun that is.
Right.
Star Trek series Lower Decks clearly establishes that junior officers and cadets not only have roommates, but often have tiny bunks which they are sealed off. Except in Lower Decks, you sleep in the hallway, isn't that? Aren't they in the hallway?
Yeah, it sure seems like it.
Like they're always walking around. Uhura having roommates on the Enterprise also references Cadet Tilly and Discovery being roommates with Michael Burnham. And although this has been the case since the first episode of SNW, Cadet's Uhura's badge is basically the same as Tilly's cadet badge from Discovery Season 1. Yeah, why not? It should be.
Yep, should be.
Yep. Spock's blood and location of the carotid artery. Yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yes.
Like, so how do you get blood to your brain? Going up the backside. When Spock gets cut, Pike mentions that it's a good thing Spock's corroded artery didn't get punctured, but Spock points out that that's not where the corroded artery actually is, but he doesn't say.
No, he doesn't.
Spock having green blood was established pretty early in the original series in that first aired episode, The Man Trap. A mention of the carotid artery also is referenced in Space Seed. In that episode, Bones jokingly tells Khan that the fastest way to kill him would be the carotid artery. Was he referring to himself or Khan?
Yeah.
He's referring to himself, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Yeah. All right. A skull behind Mbenga in the sick bay. Speaking of Bones in the original series, in several shots in this episode, we see a random skull sitting behind Mbenga in sick bay. Bones had one in nearly the exact same place. That's cool.
Yes.
Was it this past season of Picard or the one before that where there's the alternate? And I guess it was, no, it was this past season where the alternate Picard had lots of skulls.
Yes, a whole room full of them.
So in the conference room, it seems like we were seeing the outline of a Daedalus-class starship behind number one. You can tell because of the model painting outline has a spherical primary hull instead of the more familiar saucer section. Although this class of starship was referenced in the Next Generation episode, Power Play, is also retroactively depicted in the model in Sisko's ready room in Deep Space Nine. The USS Horizon, the ship that predated the Enterprise in A Piece of the Action, was thought to have been a Daedalus-class starship. Essentially, these ships were around after the era of Archer, but before the Disco Strange New Worlds original series of the mid-23rd century. I think it's interesting that the movie 2001, I can't remember the name of the ship. Oh, I almost had it. Was on its way to Jupiter and had a spherical main area.
Yeah.
So when number one stuns Hammer, the Phaser stunning effect sounds just like that from the several episodes of the original series, as it should, really.
Yes,
I suppose. Did Mbenga reference Star Trek Enterprise? When Mbenga sympathizes with number one about her hidden heritage, he says that once humans went into space, we found new bigotries, human and Vulcan blood. That was great. We all changed.
Yeah.
Our enlightenment. We're going, jeepers. Now it's humans and Illyrians. This seems to reference the events of Star Trek Enterprise, specifically the episode Terra Prime and Demons, in which a xenophobic group of humans tries to create hysteria by creating a Vulcan-human hybrid baby. Where would we be without a certain population trying to create hysteria?
Yes.
Yeah. This comment also suggests that Illyrians, even before the genetic enhancement, are not human. Maybe.
Oh, seems pretty human. You think so, because Una said she's from far away. So it ain't humans that they came from.
I still don't know how she hadn't been detected.
I know.
Illyrians are like reverse genesis devices. Una makes a huge point to La'an at the end of the episode that Illyrians genetically modify themselves to adapt to planets. In another roundabout Wrath of Khan reference, this seems to make Illyrians like the opposite of the genesis device. Instead of terraforming a planet to meet their needs, they transform themselves. Well, that's forgivable, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Nothing other wrong with that. I don't.
Yeah, think. Other people just wear spacesuits.
Yeah.
So there's a person in the pattern buffer. We learned in the episode that Dr. Mbenga is keeping his critically ill daughter in the transporter's pattern buffer indefinitely. This chick was first seen in Trek in the Next Generation episode Relics, in which Scotty stored himself in the buffer for over 70 years. In the same bottle of scotch, too.
Yes.
And number one references Deep Space Nine twice. Number one's confession to Pike about her hidden status as someone who is genetically enhanced echoes Dr. Bashir revealing the same thing to Captain Sisko in the DS9 episode Dr. Bashir, I presume. And this episode ends with number one deleting her log entry just like Sisko did in the DS9 episode In the Pale Moonlight. So a lot of Marvel-like echoes and associations,
yes, absolutely.
References. Yeah. These two properties are racing to see who can get the most references in, I think.
I think so, too.
Does it get a little obnoxious for you, or are you whatever?
No, I enjoy these. These are fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it makes us chase them all down.
Yes, it does.
And if you don't, you can
always
say
Lower Decks here.
Yeah, and you can always say to your friends, "Did you see that? See what? Oh yeah, what are you?
Yeah,
you didn't see that.
You
what?
Call yourself a fan?
I know, it's so terrible."
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on each and every episode this season. Our deadline for feedback is 10 p.m. Eastern every Friday during the season. You can send your feedback via email or audio to contact us at fangirlzone.com.
Yo, what are we doing?
You do the contacts.
Okay. Go to www.fangirlzone.com and click on the contact link, where you'll find several ways to contact us via email or through social media. At Twitter, he's at Sawyer Steve, and I'm at The Real ID Dave. That's The Real underscore ID underscore Dave.
Please review and rate us on iTunes and any other platform you use for your podcast. With good ratings and reviews, it helps other fans of the show find us, as there are plenty of other Strange New World podcasts out there. Tell your friends, and we do hope you're enjoying our podcast. And don't forget to check out the other great Fangirl Zone podcasts.
The fourth episode is on May 26th and is titled Memento Mori. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
So until then, remember.
This is Chief Engineer Steve. Of course, that's why I'm wandering around the ship in the middle of the night running diagnostics for fun.
Ooch. Boy, he is tough. Excuse me. And this is Redshirt Dave. When I found Nurse Chapel passed out on the floor, I immediately covered her with me.